What's going on, family? This your boy Jay Gibson, and I am the new face of finance. I'm also the $1 million manager, and you know I'm the host of the number one late night, late show. So late is early. Late night boss talk. We're gonna talk about a lot of things tonight. Last night we got into some good topics, but we're gonna turn it up tonight. And what we're gonna talk about tonight is what happens after your customer says no. So get locked in, get comfortable, get you some popcorn, get you something to drink, do whatever you need to do, slap yourself, because it's time for Late Night Boss Talk. What's going on, y'all? It's Jay Gibson. You know what I'm saying? I like to thank everybody who's been tuning in. We're also finally getting spread to other platforms, so wherever you're hearing this, I'd just like to welcome you. It's a couple episodes before this one, so this is your first time listening, go back, please, and listen to the first couple episodes. Now, what I want to talk about tonight is what happens after your customer says no. Now, when most people starting a business, they always anticipate, that they're going to catch on fast, right? You're so excited about your idea. We talked about that last night. I gave you some strategies of how you could build your business basically from zero and take it to point A, point B, and maybe even point C if you're ready. But tonight we're going to talk about what happens when you put your product out and the customer says no. Now, what I mean by saying no is not necessarily not buying your product, but either saying no to your price, either saying that depends on who your customer is. Your customer could be another business, right? This is for a lot of the B2B people ears need to perk up right now. Sometimes in business, the customer is not always the public. The customer can be other businesses. So that's what they call a B2B business. And in that type of business, you have to be what some people call juiced in, or, you know, looped in, or, you know, clicked in, or, you know, some people call it a DC crony capitalism. But it's basically based on relationships. And if you're a small company, it's hard to gain credibility, and nobody wants to be, you know, your test subject. So what you need to do is find out, depending on what niche you're in, what the company you're going after usually, first of all, what they need, but when they do spend money on something, what do they usually spend the money on? What are they in the market for, so to speak? So let's say if you have a company that sells car parts, you're not going to be trying to do business with a company that sells donuts. It just doesn't mix, unless you're selling them auto parts for the trucks that deliver the donuts. But see, I'm too smart. I'm going to keep it simple for y'all. What I'm saying is find a business that matches up with your business and then do some research, right? Most people in business fail on that first impression because they don't do the research. So when they go after that business, you know, and they put in their proposal, or they have that big meeting, the customer says no, in this case, another business, because you didn't do your research most of the time. Now, what we have to first do is be honest about the product we're selling. Is the product actually scalable? When you're doing business with another business, they very rarely do one-off transactions as far as when they take your product and they sell it to the consumer. Now, let's say it's a software product, and you're selling it to another company for them to use within their company. So they're not going to scale it in the sense of putting it out to the masses. But within that company, it's going to be stress tested. And what stress tested means is that if you have a software, they're going to put all their people on it. They're going to depend on it. And they're going to add more and more to that specific system to see if it can hold the amount of traffic, right? And the bandwidth is what they call in the IT world. So that is one particular way to see if it's scalable. But in a traditional sense, let's say you make a certain product, you make some type. I had a teacher back in college, and he used to also be a warden at a federal prison. And he was able to secure a government contract for these flashlight things, kind of like GoPro style, had a headband that goes with them. And some of the soldiers would use them out in the field. So he necessarily wasn't making the whole device, but the casing for the head, for the light, is what he made out of his facility. And he got the contract. And the problem is, like I'm saying to you guys, let's say if you get a government contract for a product like that, if they make the first 1,000 orders, you might be able to cover them. But what happens when they come back and say they need 100,000 units and they're going to need them quick? You may not have the capability to produce that much product and have that much turnaround. That's why most larger businesses are very leery about dealing with a small business, especially if they don't have a proven track record. So the first thing you need to do is do your research, right? See who you're actually talking to. Then when you do your first layer of research, you might just be looking up the company. Like I said, looking at the deals they've done, following some news clippings. If you're really smart, you may actually go to the website, do some research, or go to LinkedIn and do some research on who you're actually meeting with. And if you're super duper smart and you know you're one of my students, right? Over at Rethink Rich Academy. You can check that out at RethinkRichAcademy.com. Shameless plug. But back to my point, if you're really smart, what you would do is not just do research on the company, not just the person you're meeting with, but what the actual product and what the actual culture of the company is. You know, what is the history? What are the features of that product? You should know their product just as good, if not better, than someone who, you know, works there. And that's going to impress them because that shows respect. So I'll tell you guys a quick story. Years ago, right, I was in a bunch of different businesses, but one of the main businesses I was in is marketing. Now, I was able to be part of a tour that was a three-month tour that traveled the country, right? We won't mention the company right now. We may actually get some of the people that were involved on the show. So I'll leave that part for another day. But the point is, I had some contacts who were connected to Dame Dash. Now, this is post-Rockefeller, but not too far after that. Maybe a year or so after the initial Rockefeller breakup. So things, suffice to say, were very, very profitable for Mr. Dame Dash. So a business partner of mine and I, we had this meeting and we were supposed to meet up with a few other gentlemen that were from the DC area. And we were coming from the Jersey area. So we met up in Manhattan. And mind you, Dame Dash's office was in the Tommy Hilfiger building right by Fifth Avenue in New York City. So he was not in some small one-room shack office. He was in a large building with two floors. So when we went to the meeting, you know, it was a lot of, I would like to say, protocol and, you know, security to get in the building. And then you get up to that floor and there's a receptionist. So there are layers before you get to the person that you're trying to meet with, much less the boss. And we went to the meeting, but we had a full meeting. What was supposed to be a 15-minute quick little meeting turned into 2 hours. And you know why? Because I had done my research. And at that time, Dame Dash had just bought ProKids, which is for, you know, for some of our millennials that don't know what ProKids is. That was one of the, you know, foundational, iconic sneaker brands from back in, let's say, the 70s. May go further than that, but I'm not so old. So, you know, you would have to look it up to see when they were founded. But I know they were popular in the 70s. And so he bought the brand for nostalgia, and he was getting ready to relaunch the brand. And so since he had a shoe company at the time, you know, this was an athletic tour. And so we were trying to see whether even if he didn't do the athletic shoe, he would do some sort of shoe, maybe be the casual shoe when they get off the court, as you see a lot of people doing now with different brands. And we were trying to see if we could work out a deal. Not for that particular year, but for the next year. Because as you know, anybody who does business, or my fellow bosses out there, the way business is done is not necessarily on the spot. They plan things out, what they call net 30, net 60, net 90. Most times in the marketing world, you're pitching for something that's going to come out next year or at least the next few quarters from now, if it's in the same year. So they very rarely do something that's going to come out next week, because they want to put the project together. They want to test it. They want to, you know, you have to set aside a budget and yada, 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 right? So we're sitting in the meeting and we're discussing, you know, the different possibilities. And when I mentioned one of his shoes that was on there, and I was able to name the shoes, he was impressed because he said, see, now this guy, he actually gives a damn about my product. He took the time to go to the website and not just look at the fact that we had sneakers, but knew the names of them and the designs. And since, you know, come to find out, Dame had a lot to do with some of the designs. So those are his ideas. And when anybody's going to be more open to listening to what you have to say, if you're showing respect for their ideas. So that's definitely was a great experience. We got a lot of information during that meeting. It wasn't the first time I had met him, but he didn't even know that, right? And we'll get to that story when I get the person who was, you know, the principal that was involved, and we'll have that, you know, story at a later time. I just wanted to give y'all a few tidbits. But the reason I use that example is to show you about how research can take you to the next level and can get you to the gatekeepers that you need to get to, because that's the next piece of when your customer says no. Most of the time, the customer says no because you can't get to the decision maker, right? So when you're talking to most companies, you're talking to that first layer, which may just be an account executive. It may be, in some cases, a receptionist. It may be a sales rep, maybe even a manager. But it takes time, right? These are jewels that I'm giving you guys for anybody who's new to business. The people who are veterans who are listening to this know, if you're in a sales department and you're trying to sell your product to another business, one of the key things that you have to do is be able to get past the gatekeeper to the decision maker, right? And so what happens is that the gatekeeper doesn't feel your product is worthy, or maybe they even have an agenda. Maybe they just don't like you. And you will never get a chance to present your product to the decision maker, who may actually like your idea. But because the gatekeeper either didn't bring it to them, or if they did, because some things, you know, contractually and legally, you can't just throw somebody's proposal in the trash. But if they do get to hear about it, it's somehow skewed on a negative context. So it never gets the full light. You don't get to plead your case, so to speak. Because sometimes proposals are turned in without you being able to actually present. The proposals they like, they invite in to pitch them in person. So that's the first thing you have to realize. So you want to do your research on the company, the products and the business that the company is in, and who are the players, right? Who they are, not just their name, but what do they stand for? What is their track record? Have they worked at different companies? Do they have any articles or press out there about them? What can you learn about their personality? What have you heard about them, right? All of that information is key. So now we're dealing with, like you said, trying to get past the gatekeeper. So a lot of times, like I said, they have somebody there that's a buffer or a layer in between you and the person you're trying to get to. What you now have to do is find a way to form a relationship with that person. You have to first make that person want to answer your email, want to pick up the phone or patch you through. So it can start with just simply being nice and being respectful, you know. Asking that person how their day went, you know, different things like that, finding some common ground. You may not be able to do research on that particular person, but once you have the first conversation with them, you can go back and then you can do the research on that particular person. A good trick for this, it's not so much a trick, but a good tactic, is to remember their name and write it down. One of the worst things in the world is when you call somewhere and, hey, I spoke to a woman, blah, 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 blah. I spoke to a gentleman, blah, blah, blah. And it's that lady or gentleman on the phone. Yeah, you spoke to me last week. So now you make them just feel like just a faceless, nameless droid that just answers the phone. And they know you have no intention of showing them any respect or you have any, you know, respect for their value in the company. And so now, what do you think your email is going to the next time? Where do you think your phone call is going to the next time? Right to the voicemail machine, right? Which will probably be full because the extension they're going to give you doesn't work. So what you have to realize is you have to respect each and every person along your journey to getting to the answer you want, which is yes. So you have to try to find a bond with that person, or maybe even find another person. Let's say you blew that first interaction, right? It happens. Happens more often than you think because you're calling and you might be a little aggressive. Your tone is, you're pushing and prodding. Well, what about this? Well, what about that? And, okay, you sure I can't talk to him? Susie told me to call here, and she said he would be available and he would take my call. And see, that's when a person says, listen, didn't I tell you they were out of town, or didn't I tell you they were at lunch, or, if you call back after 2, maybe you could reach them, right? And so, therefore, you skipped over that. You didn't listen. You were not communicating effectively. You were just force-feeding what you wanted to do down their throat and making them feel like they were insignificant. You were questioning the answer they gave you, and now you're just pissing them off. So that interaction more than likely is not going to result in you getting what you want. So you may have to find another person, right? And a lot of times, let's say they call it mimicking. So if a person, now that you've talked to them, they have a more relaxed tone, they're easygoing. You have someone that you know that's easygoing, call, and they may just spark up a conversation, right? It can work whether it's a male or female. Some guys they're from Texas, or they're from a certain part of the country, or hey, where you're from, or where's the weather at where you're at, where the office is at. Oh yeah, it's cloudy, it rains here all the time. From you doing your research, you would know that company may be in Seattle, maybe it's in California, maybe it's in Florida, maybe it's in, wherever. And you can spark a conversation up with that person just talking about the weather. You would really be surprised just that 5 minutes or less of just small talk can help you get a bond with that person. And then they warm up to you. They give you a little more information. And even if you still don't have a snowball chance in hell of getting your product purchased by that company, you have now made a connection and a contact. They may even look at what you have and say, hey, well, this looks good, but you may want to look at this part or that part. They really kind of, they kind of lean towards proposals that have such and such. Or put this part first in your proposal. Now, that person is not only going to help you, you turn the gatekeeper into an advocate. And that's a skill, right? That's a communication skill that you have to develop over time. Some of you may have it already from previous jobs. Some of you may not. But that is something, if you're not a talker, if you're not a communicator, if you're not somebody who can find a way, whether it's through email or on the phone. Some people are email people, most people in this day and age. So a nice warm email, everything spelled correctly. That person, the person you spoke to or whoever responds to you, thanking them for their information, for taking the time, a follow-up email that just says thank you. You'd be surprised how far that goes. Or just, showing empathy for them because they work in a company, even though you may own your company, but they don't have to know that. Because what do? They have layers. So what do? You present the illusion that you have layers. If you're the CEO of the company and they can just call and get you at any given time, how large does your organization seem to this other business? Because keep in mind, this conversation is in the context of your business doing business with another company, right? And so therefore, it's a different language. It's a different posture. It's a different presentation than you doing business with the public. That is very, very key to remember. So if you're calling a company that has several different departments, several different levels of executives, and you're trying to get to the people who actually make the decisions, which is not always the CEO. There might be somebody who's just the director of that particular department who makes those decisions on what they're going to use. If you're a marketing company, are they going to use your, if they're going to spend some marketing dollars with you because they like how you do your part of the marketing? You may not get the whole campaign, but guess what? You got the East Coast, so you got the Northeast region, or even within a state, they'll give you this side of the state. And they may have somebody else that they use for the other side of the state, or somebody the company already has a relationship with. But guess what? Their prices have gotten a little high, and they're ready to give someone else a shot. So those are all scenarios that can play out, but you'll never get to that point if you don't get past the gatekeeper. So whether it's email or phone, find a way to, not only get the information you want, but to spark up some sense of camaraderie, or spark up a rapport with that person you're communicating with, because you'll get a lot more information like that. The next step that I would say, if the customer says no, is to ask questions. You want to say, well, you know, okay, they're presently not looking for what you're offering at this time. You know, well, is there a particular reason that, you know, would there be another time that, you know, is more applicable to, you know, what we're offering? You know, is there anything else you're looking for? If they, you know, we also have other services, blah, blah, blah. So that is a way to, right there on the spot, signal that, one, number one, you're hungry, you like the business. A lot of people just want to see if you're willing to follow up, right? You send your first offer, they always refuse it, just to see if you'll follow up, because they get so many proposals every single day by everybody in the world telling them they can do everything they suppose, you know, they promising all this stuff, they overpromise, and then, you know, they follow up and say, hey, can you come in for a proposal? And they don't have their proposal together, or they don't have the, you know, the team. This is really just them, but they sent a proposal saying they had four different people who each were specialists in each area, right? Because we'll get into that tomorrow night, is when the customer says yes, and how that can be just as bad if you're not prepared. So, like I said, focus on doing your research. Then you have to get with the gatekeeper and find a way to get past them, or get as much information you can, or form a bond with them. And then if you don't get, you know, if the business still doesn't happen and they say no, find a way to ask questions. Learn as much as you can from that experience. As I told you guys last night, make your mistakes early and make them while they're cheap, right? Now, that may be a missed opportunity to get their business, but it could turn into a $1 million teachable moment if you take the lesson from that experience and you go back and you make the adjustments and you see what you did wrong, or you see what you may not have. Maybe your business is not ready for prime time yet. Maybe it's not ready for that big opportunity, you know, and you're saying in your mind, hey, I can do this and I can take on this large contract. Maybe they want to see some proof, because like I said, nobody wants to be the test subject, you know, and when they're spending their money. So you may have to offer your services for free, right? Now, we can get into that at another time. I don't want to hold you guys, you know, like I said, these boss talks, I'm trying to keep them right now to about 30 minutes, so you guys come back for some more. If I give you too much on one night, you may not need me tomorrow. So that's a business trick. Always have a sense of urgency, right? But I know you're going to come back, because like I said, this is the number one podcast for entrepreneurs and insomniacs, right? So I'll leave you guys with this. When you're doing business and you're just starting out, or even if you've been in business for a while, but you're ready to take that step to the next level, there's going to be a lot of different scenarios, a lot of different experiences. You have to be prepared for obstacles, right? You have to find a way to overcome the objections. And there's several techniques you can use. And like I said, we'll get into that as we go forward in our series. But like I said, once you learn from that person saying no, and you go back and you work on your product, or you work on your pitch, or you work on whatever it is that, you know, maybe your website didn't explain enough who you are and what you do. Maybe you don't have any testimonials by anybody else, right? So how can they know if you've done business with anybody if this looks like nobody's ever, you know, what we call co-signing your business or giving that stamp of approval, right? You know, nobody's verifying you. You're just telling them you're the best thing since sliced bread, but they've never heard of you. So you have to overcome those hurdles. Name ID, brand identity is key. Sometimes people get a lot of contracts based on their brand and their image rather than their actual skill set. So those are things you will grow over time. Those are things you'll learn. But even when they say no, it's not always the end. Even if that particular opportunity doesn't come through, you'll get the next one, because now you're armed with the information that you needed. And sometimes you'll find out that opportunity wasn't really for you. That's the key that I want to leave you guys with tonight. Every opportunity is not always for you. What's for you will come to you, right? Even if that you thought that was going to happen for you, and if you only would have had, you know, your stuff together, you would have got through. And that may be true, but if that was meant for you, You know, I've walked into situations where I didn't have any inclination I would get anything. And if a person wants to do business with you, they will find a way to give you that business or give you that opportunity. Most of the time, it's because they heard or they saw something or they heard somebody else validate something that you do. So you're a specialist and you're in high demand. So I want you to leave tonight knowing that and be willing to work on your business and take the steps that are necessary to get to the next level. And when the person says no, it's not always the end. So with that being said, I'm going to sign off for the night. This is your boy Jay Gibson, host of Late Night Balls Talk. We're going to be here each and every night in May, but only after midnight. Because if it's after midnight and you ain't up, then you ain't down. Hit me at Late Night Balls Talk on all social media, and I'm out. Till the next time, it's the Wolf Man. Ride with me. Arrooooooo! Peace.